Welcome to the latest episode of Global Class, a podcast where we explore the international expansion stories of the world's fastest growing companies and the career journeys of their globally minded leaders. My name is Aaron McDaniel, and I'm here with my co-host, Klaus Wiehe.
In this episode, we're excited to welcome Javier Mufraki, Chief Executive Officer at SVN International Corporation, a partner at Eloquim Consulting. Prior to his role at SVN, Javier was the CEO at YPO, where he achieved a new record of 34,000 members in 150 countries. He was also previously the president and CEO of Club Med Europe, Middle East, and Africa. In this conversation, we talk about why speaking the same language as locals can increase your ability to develop an understanding of the culture that's required to build a successful expansion strategy in that market. The power of authentic self as integral parts of personal and professional success, why skills are overrated in building teams, and what is more valuable metrics to look for instead, and the power of stories in better communication and reinforcing organizational vision. Let's begin.
Awesome. Well, welcome to Global Class, a podcast about entrepreneurs, global leaders, and the businesses they run. And we are so excited to have Javier Mufraki, who is the CEO of YPO, Young Presidents Organization, which is an organization of over 37,000 CEOs across 142 countries. If you talk about a global organization, that is definitely YPO. And Javier, you've had an amazing international experience, coming from France originally, but working in global companies like now Mondelez, but Kraft, yeah. In international roles. And then, definitely something we want to dig into is your experience with Club Med, where you turned things around a bit and you had to run an organization of thousands of people from many countries. And now in recent years, moving on to YPO, which is an amazing organization. Welcome. Thank you for
being here. Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Klaus. Happy to be on the podcast.
So one thing we love to start with is what we found in common with a lot of entrepreneurs, these culturally minded business leaders that are the catalyst behind successful international growth of their organizations, are formative experiences that showed them that there was, a world beyond their backyard. And, I know for you, there's some stories related to childhood that showed you there was a world beyond your native France, but why don't you tell us a little bit of story of
how you became
globally minded leader?
Absolutely. The first thing is my dad was an expat for an American company.
Exxon Mobil.
Yeah. So I don't know if we can say brands. So we had the opportunity to live in different countries, Europe, but also Africa and the US. So you can imagine for a kid, I was 11 years old when I moved to Ivory Coast, which is Western Africa, and starting to be surrounded by kids from 60 nationalities. Or same thing when I was in Washington, D.C. for that role. So it started at an early age because of my dad. And also, my wife is British. She has a similar journey than I had. And of course, working for Kraft Foods and Mondelez, I worked from already all the different countries from Europe to get a product done from plants in Eastern Europe, development in UK, the team in Germany and Spain and France to get all of that together to get it done was kind of a journey as well. And then Club Med first base in Miami, which is another, very global city to look at the Americas and then back to Europe, Africa and Middle East. So a lot of global exposure and especially a lot of exposure of global teams. Every time I work for the last 20 years, I always have like 15, 20 nationalities surrounding me. And that's what I find exciting.
So that experience early on, has that sort of sparked your interest in pursuing it very intentionally, or was it more like unintentionally you moved into these roles? Can you talk a little bit about that, how that sparked curiosity?
In terms of curiosity, I think especially at an early age to be in a country like in Africa, in Western Africa, that completely opened my eyes about what the world really was compared to what I think it was. The diversity of people I met, the experience I had, and everything people might think about those countries and when you're in is so different. I was in a local international school, I have people from all the different countries of Africa and also from Europe, but a lot of Africa. And I realized, wow, somebody from Senegal is very different than somebody from Ivory Coast. Well, they speak French, right? They're so close. It's so different. I'm not even talking about Eastern Africa. So I realized quickly that, oh my, it's going to look stupid right now. I say, wow, countries in Africa are as different than countries in Europe. And for many people, they don't think that way. Or it's why when you're in US, sometimes you say, you know, you talk to a French to a Spanish or even a Belgium, we speak French, very, very different countries. And very early, I realized that that ability to connect with people and try to understand their different culture was super interesting for me to understand, you know, what they were looking for, get their insights. So that was exciting in a way to learn. And at the same time, I realized that it was a very important skill for the world I'm going to be into. Because we know, especially in a digital time, you know, there's no more borders. A lot of people that may be speaking English, but they all come from this very, very different background. And if you do some mistakes, that can harm your business forever. If you have the right intention to just put yourself in their shoes and not judge, but really, really trying hard to understand how they communicate, what do they do, what is important from them, you can do a massive, massive progress.
And that obviously applies universally, but just to the point of Africa, Klaus and I have had business leaders from Africa on the podcast, and I think a lot of people don't realize the opportunities there. You know, there's over a half a billion people under the age of 19 right now. It's going to be over a billion in the next 10 to 15 years. And to your point, it's not one place or you know, they think of like, you know, the Northern Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa as two big chunks, but there's so much diversity, so much opportunity there. We've heard stories about differences in business culture and, you know, even neighboring countries, you know, having challenges of just overcoming some of the differences of how to do business besides just the number of languages.
Yeah. And even in many of those countries, the north of a country can react very differently than the south of the country. Because, you know, some of these countries, the boundaries were created, you know, in the beginning of the 20th century, were vertical against the water because everybody wants it to have a port. But the culture were horizontal. So in many of the countries, like in Western Africa, you also need to understand how the North is thinking, how the South is thinking. And people say, oh, wow, it's like in the US. I say, yeah, you know, Africa is big. It's like in France. You don't do the same way the business in Paris than you do in outside of Paris. You don't do the same business in London and outside of London. So you, depending what you want to achieve, you really, really need to understand those very unique differences because that could make a break or a win very quickly.
Right. To kind of paint the picture a little bit more, do you think you can share a little bit more of those cultural differences, any situations that you've been in where you didn't realize and also learn how to maybe do business a little bit different in this country? So if you can kind of paint the picture a little bit.
I can say different things. I think for me, which is speaking the language, even if you don't speak it well, make a major, major difference. Right. So I operate with Club Med in the Caribbean. So compared to the other people who have been in my team before, we might be American in terms of experience, they didn't speak Spanish. So, of course, the staff and people speak English, but each time they're going to speak in their English, you're not going to feel that they speak, oh, they may not think well, you know, they I don't understand what they mean. Yeah, because it's not their first language. Right. The moment I move to Spanish with them, then I create a connection with them. Oh my God, he's doing the effort. And then maybe I was not able for me to express myself as good as they would do it in Spanish. Luckily, in Latin America, they don't speak as fast as in Madrid, in Spain. But that totally changed my perception about the person because now what they're expressing to me was so smart, was so profound, and it was really in their words. And that make a big shift for me. I say, wow, no matter what I'm going to do in the future, if I don't speak the language of the people on site, I'm going to need to help myself and my team to make sure that I'm able to never judge people by the way they speak their language. So that's the first very clear element. And I was able to discuss directly with union in Latin America, which never have been done before. And I can tell you our relation were really great because I made the effort in speaking in their language. And when I wasn't sure about the word, I switch in English and they would answer me in Spanish or English. That changed everything because you talk at the same level to people. And that was a huge learning from me.
That goes into the topic a little bit about biases, right?
Yeah.
So obviously you've been in international business for many years. You travel across the world. So maybe you have less biases because you're more used to international business. But how do you then transfer that to the team as well that may not understand that? For example, that American team that works with the team in Dominican Republic or wherever that is, they are not really feeling that they're aligned. Maybe that American team is judging that team that are better at speaking Spanish, but maybe not as eloquent in English. How do you remove those barriers a little bit and those biases within the team?
I'm not sure you can take out the biases, but you have training about biases. So I think the first thing we try to get people to get is a doubt.
Right.
They say, oh no, I don't have biases. And then you're just waiting for the moment it's going to happen because it's always happened. And they say, oh, well, you're right. Having the doubt already is a massive step. The second aspect is that, and actually you can find it on the internet, it's called the cultural map. It's from a teacher from Erin, find her last name. She's from INSEAD. She got an amazing tool is that you type the nationality of people in your team, and they're going to show you where you have to be cautious or less cautious about the way they communicate. One key learning I would always say to people is that you really have the number one element is low context, high context. You see, you ask me a question. As an American, you expect an answer in 2 minutes. I was born in France. You're going to need to listen to me for 3 or 5 minutes. Sorry about this. But American, Canadian are very low context. So I'm going to tell you right away an answer. And then that's going to be okay for you. 90% of the other culture need to explain why they come up with that conclusion, the high context environment. So American think that European, they don't know what are they talking about. They're not clear. The non-US will think the American are superficial. So you need to know, and I'm talking about context, but the way we do decision, the way we do feedback, there are things that I would really encourage people to have is that we all want to have a diverse team. If you really want to have the power of diversity in your team, you need the team to understand what are those biases. At least, you know, there's 3 or 4 that you're really going to need to be very cautious to make sure you have the power of diversity. Otherwise, the reverse. Diversity is going to go against your goal. And that is critical.
Interesting. So let's you were talking a bit about Club Med. Let's dig into that experience. So just for context for the audience, when Xavier took over the division, it was like perennial loser, like not profitable, right?
Yeah.
And then became one of the leading divisions in the company. You know, how do you do one of those turnarounds with such a diverse group, thousands of employees, many nationalities represented? How do you, you know, effectively lead a cultural change or, you know, sorry, a business change in the organization while managing some of those cultural differences?
Yeah. The first thing I would say that, you know, it's never one person. It's never about me. So what I learned on the ground, I was 31, so I was very young. It was my first job as a CEO. What we made clear is that we needed to have data, very accurate data about what was going on to take, we think, the right decision. And I think what I was critical in our approach is as a leader is to be, you can see the sign behind me, authentic self. So really telling the story about what you see, express it as much as possible to, at that time, 3,000 employees we had, going the resorts, speaking the languages. Again, I'm going to do it in Spanish, going to do it in English, I'm going to do it in Creole or French. So people understand the situation and have the same story. I think, as I mentioned, depending on where we are, we want slow context or high context. But even if I'm finance, I'm going to look for something very different than if I'm from marketing or HR. It's like nationalities. So what we learn from our own experience on the ground is that you may have at least have the same story for everybody, because everybody can understand the story. So, and the story is that, okay, this is why we are here. We identified as A, B, and C, and D. This is where we would like to go, is this. And this is what we really like the culture to be. We were all in with the team I recruited and joined me. And that was all about also the culture we wanted to have. And the authentic self now, which is behind me, is really something we started to work on. So I'm 46 now, 15 years ago. We realize that if people can tell what they think, is they're not afraid about telling it to the rest of the group in their broken English or broken Spanish, then we have a winner. Because if you have transparency about where we are, where we want to go as much as possible, if you get people who are not afraid to say what they think, then we can empower them much more to take the right decisions. So the success was indeed having a clear strategy, but it's, you know, people say culture eats strategy for breakfast. And this is all, if you don't have the right culture and you don't live for your culture, it's not going to work. And being able to speak with people with their language, or taking the time not to talk to people as a big group, but in a smaller group, make a big difference, and go over and over and over again. That makes a big difference. Everybody from a receptionist to a top, you know, general manager of a resort should hear the same story.
Right. I think this reminds us of a story that we share in the book, and it relates to the management framework that we developed, where we emphasize the importance of communication, clarity, building feedback loops, and reinforcing things over time. So what we share in the book are... Actually, it's not in the book, but it's going to be in new versions of the book. It's going to be the story of Rakuten, where the founder of Rakuten, Mikitani-san, he changed. He decided to make this change in the organization that they're going to be a global company. So they decided to speak English in the company. And he also put up a structure where every Monday they would have a meeting called an Asakai, Monday morning meeting, where Mikitani-san sits down, shares the company core values, mission, vision, and strategy to the entire organization, and then basically records that and share also the key strategic decisions that they made during that week and tying them back to company core values, etc.
Okay.
They record it. They then send it out across the world because they're a global organization. So 3 hours later, they send out this recording to Asia, 3 hours later to Europe, and then 3 hours later to Latin America. So they kind of reinforce these company core values and things they made in terms of decisions to the entire organization. But then also they allow the regional offices to run their own Asakais. They also record these things and share it to other parts of the organization as well. So they're building these very strong sort of feedback loops, mechanisms within the company to make sure that the entire organization is aligned around the direction that they're moving. And you're sharing a little bit the similar thing in terms of communication that are key elements of that. So just wanted to highlight that.
And I take the example of what I'm doing now in YPO. So we have like, it's 500, you know, let's say 1,000 employees. Or 1,000 people working or interested in YPO. I do a town hall call every 6 weeks. But the first thing we decide to do, I do two. Because in the past, you know, you can never find a time where everybody can be on the call. And people say, oh, you know, let's say 70% of your employees are in this region. So, you know, Asia, they would just listen to the recording. I say, no. So I'm doing sometimes a call for, in, let's say, 400 people in one side, and then maybe I'm going to have 50 people in Asia. But I can tell you the impact on people in Asia is amazing. And actually, the call is very different, because the way we do it, we ask me as speaker a little bit to give the same information in business, and people can access directly those information business live. So full transparency about numbers. But I give, you know, my own perspectives about it. And then I call it around the world. You have employees from around the world. Hey, I'm here for that place. And they talk about something in 2 minutes they're working on. And people are excited for them. and we see all the faces from around the world. Instead of sometimes, you know, this big meeting is just the CEO talking. No, I say everybody's on the screen and we try to interact with people around. And people, when they have a question, they just raise their hand or they, you know, they add on the chat. It's a 45-minute call. And I can tell you it has huge impact, so much impact that people feel that, wow, I can hear directly from Xavier. They feel that we know each other right. because they see me every 6 weeks. And, you know, it's very cool call. Like, right. not as good as the people from the tech industry, I'm sure, but we make it very, very casual. They love the transparency. And they love that when I answer a question, I really, really, really take, you know, making sure that I don't say, oh, I can't talk about it. No, I want to be as transparent as possible. And that make a huge difference to have those moments of connection with everybody, which we didn't have in the past. It was not possible. Now it's super easy to do it with this Zoom call. And I'm surprised by the number of people joining live all the time.
That's amazing. We have a much smaller community. I think it's about 25 entrepreneurs. Yeah. we actually had our first town hall that was last week, I believe, or the week before that. And we had 10 on the first call and then I think 2 on the second call. So we're building it up slowly, but we're doing a little bit of a similar thing. But one thing Aaron asked on the call was, what is your favorite dessert locally? And so they share these local experiences, desserts that were really important to them. So everyone else got excited for them and wanted to go and actually taste it in their own cities if they could find it. So that was a little bit the way that we approached it on that call.
That's good.
So I think there's a lot we want to talk about with YPO.
Please.
Before we go there, I have to ask, and I'm sure you're often asked about this, and I have a little bit of experience on national TV myself. I was on Shark Tank, but you were on Undercover Boss.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that experience. Was it what you expected? I know obviously there's like narratives that they pull because it's television, but talk a little bit about that.
I think it's a very interesting experience. I think you're never ready to experience it, I have to say, even if you prepare yourself. Because at one point you say, you know, how can they get the emotion within the program? How can you get this connection with these employees you have? I have in mind that in my case, and it was the first time they were doing internationally, it was nearly 20 hours of filming per day for 12 days. Okay, so you see the 30 minutes, 5 version. Like, so there is, you know, very, very quickly that's the choice I made. You have to be 100% yourself. The moment you try to play somebody you're not, people are going to see it on TV. So that was my choice. And they told me, you're going to look a bit stupid sometimes. I say, I'm fine with it. But you see the result at the end and you should be happy about it. So in the middle of the show, at one point, I started to be very exhausted. And I think that's why it's so emotional, because, you know, it's a lot of filming per day and the makeup and the craziness. What I can tell you is that I think what you saw on TV was really deep connection I had with actually 5, because they only show 4, I think, but we do it with 5, but they can only show 4. And this story was really amazing. And those connections you have are really real on the moment you have it. So it looks very weird because you see 45 minutes. But those connection and moments are very, very unique. And I was happy about the end when I see the end program, because we were really able to tell stories, which are stories with Club Med, which is an organization I adore, which is you have people who have no degree, no passport, not even money to buy a suit. And it was a story of one of the bartender. I knew it before. He was about to go to a ski resort in the Alps as his next position. He's telling in a story, he's never left Dominican Republic for his life. He went once in Miami, and now he's going to work in a ski resort later. So all those stories were really unique, and it was a great way to show what Club Med is all about, giving opportunities from people from around the world. And it's an organization where every year general manager might be 30 years old, 35 years old, and they come from every flag from the planet. It could be, yes, France, could be US, but Morocco, Dominican Republic, in future, Mexico, giving that opportunity for people around the world to be in those positions is an incredible statement of this company ability to really understand what global means. So yeah, it's a beautiful story. Yeah. I know everybody knows that I'm not drinking alcohol because I'm not even, I don't even remember if margarita is vodka or I don't remember what it was, tequila. I think I do the tequila with whatever. That's funny. That was funny to watch. Yeah, I
definitely echo what you said. I feel like I could have watched every episode of Shark Tank and it wouldn't have given me, you know, exactly the preparation you needed. Uh-huh. So there's a ton we want to talk about YPO, but maybe just to start, we'd love to get, you know, in your words, a little bit more about YPO, a little bit about the story, a little bit about really the power of it. So I have friends, as an example, that are members and, you know, I guess this is not something that's not understood anywhere else, but they talk about how it's lonely at the top, right? As a CEO, it's very difficult. And they've shared with me that there's just, they can talk about things that they cannot talk about with other people just for fear of being judged, you know, because some of it is like, oh, problems of the top. Oh, I feel bad for you. But, you know, it still affects how their organizations are run. And I'd love to just start by having you talk a little bit about the power of YPO.
Yeah, and the short story is that, you know, it was created in 19... So it's a nonprofit first, so we have to understand that. So it was created in 1950. And at that time, Ray Hickok lost his dad. I think he was 27. And of course, his dream was to be the CEO of their company, who was doing belts. And they were one of the first producers of security belt in the car, seat belt. But the next one day, he wake up, he lost his best friend, his mentor, his dad. You have 300 employees looking at him, say, are you going to be able to do the job, dude? You're 27. I imagine his mother, brother and sister are, you know, I don't know what to think about it. And he has to take that job and look at how he's running the company. So talking about lonely at the top. And which is interesting is that quickly discuss with another and two other CEOs in his position who got those jobs very early, at early age. And they realized that because you're so open-minded when you got those positions early, talking to each other was so good for them. And then they realized that it would be great if they could meet other people like them. They put an ad in a Wall Street Journal and they say, oh, let's meet at the Waldorf Astoria. We're 1950s. Remember, there's no internet there. And quickly, I think the second time, there were 1,000 of them.
Oh, wow.
From different places. And they said, so they're starting to open chapters in different cities. And now we're like 30,000 people from around the world in 142 countries. What you said is exactly why YPO is amazing, because I was a member before being the CEO. So imagine when I was at Club Med, I was like at that time, 35 years old, you know, you're running, 3,000 employees, you know, imagine the time of revenue and profit, the stress you have. I was able to connect with a group of members, 7 of them every month. And we will talk about business, but also about personal matters for us and family matters. So the level of trust you have with your peers is amazing. And you're going to talk, as you mentioned, things about really what keeps you awake at night. And it's, we believe it's so important because if you have the ability to listen to your peers and feel that you're not alone, that's super important because the impact of a CEO of being in a good personal mental health or taking the right decision is so important. So we always say, yes, we're 37 employees, 30 CEOs, but we represent 20 million employees. And if those employees have, you know, spouse and kids, those, you know, members, 37,000 members have an impact of 70 million people, direct impact. Yeah. And you know that direct goal. So the ripple effect of that organization is critical because, of course, we want our members to be happy. But the main goal is that we want to be better leaders. So each time a leader of our organization is trained with the best school in the world, we have a program with MIT, with Harvard, with Stanford, Oxford, specifically just for YPO and others, if they're able to connect with each other, is in a good mental state themselves, they're going to take better decisions. They're going to be better leader. And if they're going to be the better leader, they're going to be great for 70 million people. And that's the, I think, the beauty of the organization. Everybody who wants to join is not first for business. Of course, there's business. We do 70 billion or 50 billion of business exchange in between members. But the first reason they join and they accept it, it's because they have this open mindset to be vulnerable about what they're facing. And they're happy to challenge each other to say, okay, let me share my own experience. Right. And doing that and then putting them in contact with the best leader in learning leadership in the world help them to be better leaders, not only for them, not only for the employees, but for all the ecosystem their business is impacting. So that's why people like myself were interested, not only in a member, but you know, how can we give more time because of the ripple effect an organization like YPO can have?
I want to highlight one thing that you talked about, and this is one of the often overlooked when it comes to international expansion and sending someone abroad internationally, and that is the family. And I think that's one of the things that we really admire in YPO, that you have that inclusivity with the family as
Absolutely.
It's not just about sending you, Javier, to Africa. It is actually your whole family. So how, can you share a little bit more about how you integrate that experience with the family as well?
Absolutely.
To build that inclusivity so they can also feel sort of at home or at least being connected to the ecosystem that, that you're going to.
Yeah. So when a member join, also their plus one join, and that which is important. So the you know, first element, you know, as I say, we have like we call forum where we meet with each other. The spouse and plus one can do the same thing because it's important for some of these couples to have that opportunity. We have also a program for the kids and teenager and young adults. It's called YNG. So YNG, they are like so young, new generation. Let's call it the new generation. They most of them are 18 to 30 years old. So it's very important for family business because they might be the person next. And there are 6,000 of them in, I think, 80 countries right now. And we do sometimes some program where it's just the member invited, sometimes the member and spouse, sometimes the member and the kids. And it's always this component of being open to each other, some element of experience of learning and getting that information. What is super important, and I'll give you an advice. An example. When I moved from Miami to Paris, and actually it's the same week we were shooting Undercover Boss, my family has to move to Paris, but nobody knew we were moving to Paris. It was a change of leadership in Europe. So we were asked, the person I was replacing and myself, not to tell anybody. So imagine my kids were born in the US. They've been in Paris, you know, for vacation, but they said, no, you move to Paris. With my wife, who is British. And we were told, I think it was 4th of July, and we're moving in September. So how do you find a school, a place to live, an international school? Well, I haven't been living in Paris for 12 years, you know. I just met a member and say, okay, I can't tell anybody by moving to Paris. And say, oh, you should connect with that person. And I say, okay. He gave me two names. And within 24 hours, I just sent a text for both of them. One of them tell me, oh, I've never met that person before. He say, oh, you know, Xavier, I would recommend that school, that school, that school, that school, that school. And for each of the school, he tell me this member, this member, this member, this member have their kids in that school. And this is their phone numbers. You can text them. They know they can't tell anything about it, but at least you know exactly what you need for you to go in that places. I've never seen something like that in my life. And I've got a lot of other examples like this. Is again, the connection to local directly with 100% trust that when you're going to receive is not a CNN, Fox News, CNBC communication, but on the ground, trusted information from the person is exceptional for in the business matter. But of course, it's even more important on the family matter or personal investment matters. Trust is the number one currency for everybody in the world, but especially CEOs. Because when you're a CEO, everybody's your friend.
Right.
But you are they really your friend? Do they really want your very best? Or do they really want to show you how much they can help you to be the best? You see where I'm getting there.
Or do they want their very best?
And their very best, of course, as well. So that's you know, trust for a CEO is extremely important because it's very hard to trust people.
Right. And just want to put a little bit of a bow on that one, right? Being able to do that very quickly and setting up the family and the operation in a new country, that will also help your leader being in a better mental state as well and not be stressed. So it's really, really important that you can take care of that very efficiently. Now, I wanted to maybe pivot a little bit, if that's okay, and talk a little bit about the concept of the entrepreneur that we have talked about in the past in our previous interviews, Javier. And we believe that obviously YPO is an organization that fosters that mindset, these globally minded leaders that are across the world and are culturally curious and agile, et cetera. I want to maybe talk a little bit more about the situation when you went from Paris to maybe Club Med in Africa. And understand a little bit more about how you approached in finding the right people to hire, because that's often the biggest challenge for leaders when they go to new countries. And obviously you can plug in YPO at the end, but what was your approach in finding that right talent? What was the channels where you found them and obviously acquired them and brought them onto your team beyond YPO? But you can obviously mention that at the end.
Absolutely. That's a very important question. And I think it's part of your, you know, methodology, finding the right local people when you don't have the knowledge and you arrive in those countries is critical. So I've got many cases like this. The area where I'm always cautious about, for me, it's a great asset, is that people who work in different countries. So let's say I'm in Club Med in the US, which was my first position. The American were saying something, the European from the headquarters were saying something else. And there was like tension. So that's how I got the job, because I worked for Kraft Food before. They say, oh, your wife is British. You've been trained in the headquarters in Paris. You may be the best profile to make the connection about why don't we understand each other? Why is there so many differences? And then some distrust maybe. So I spent a lot of time first locally to listen to my American colleagues, even if I was for them at the beginning, oh, is the guy coming from the headquarters? And then I started to understand exactly what they were saying. And then I started to say, okay, what's the strategy of Club Med Global? What is the bridge? So I did that first job, which is very critical. And then to make the changes we're going to need to make, what I've the people we're going to need in the team. The more people could have the double knowledge I had in terms of languages was important, or at least another one. Even if they were American with from Latin America, for me, it's a big plus. Or French who lived abroad in another country is something very important. Understanding, you only understand a different country when you live in another country. Even if people say, oh, I travel all around the world. Yeah, you travel for 2 weeks to 3 months. But have you lived there? Did you have to have a job over there? Did you have to go to the doctor over there? Did you have to put your kids in school over there? Did you have to do the shopping in the local Walmart over there? Which restaurant are you getting into? Who are your friends over there, expat or locals? When people really have a true local experience, no matter when it was, they have that mindset to work for a more global organization. So I think it's when you go in a local country, you know, most of the time you want to have these 80% people who are going to be just local. You need to have at your top management in different position people who have learned. Great if they have the double, you know, if you're French headquarters and in Africa, it's good to have somebody who's French who lived in Africa. But already having able to live in another continent and country is going to be a major asset in the people I'm looking for. And then what I say is that it's very important that when you hire somebody, you have worked with them before, or they have worked with somebody you really trusted with them before. Again, Americans are amazing on resume and interviews, and you may be surprised later about what they say they told you they've done and the reality of what they really did. And then you talk to a Belgian person or French and they say, oh, you know, did they only did that? But the reality, yes, they really did it. And even more than what they said. So when you, you know, that person at work with somebody you really trusted before, that's avoid some of the mistakes. And I would tell people always bet first on promotion versus taking people from outside from a shiny resume. Because people who've been in the organization before, they know it very well. And sometimes they didn't perform as well as people were expected because they were not in the right environment. Right. Or you can always try to find, I love to do that, who are the young potential for the organization? And I spent a lot of time when I was at Club Med mentoring young managers and help them to be general managers. So they were promoting very, very fast. They have, each time I put them in different countries, and for them, they're going to be your 20% who's going to run, give the excitement and energy within the organization. Yeah. So something I'm looking at all the time is, I say, in some ways, skills and experience could be overrated. What you look for is a growth mindset, positive people. Because somebody who has a growth mindset and a positive attitude can learn very quickly new skills. And they're going to try to upgrade themselves with how the world is changing. And we always tell people in marketing, where they used, when I was in the marketer, so now it's 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 90% of it has changed completely. And somebody who's just out of college might be better in terms of skills than somebody who have 10 years experience. But the person with 10 years experience have knowledge about leadership. That's what I'm going to looking for more than it, the marketing skills of that person. But somebody's getting from college, super growth mindset, happy to learn, happy to be coached by somebody older, is could really transform the organization quicker. And I learned that from Club Med. The chairman, Henri Giscard d'Estaing, was the very best at that. He would, you know, he gave me the position. I was 31. Oh. I mean, that's an amazing statement for him. And he did that over and over and over again. We call that the Club Med babies around the world. We have a lot of CEOs around the world who have that position because he took a bet on us instead of looking outside. And we always be entirely grateful for that opportunity. And we give everything we can for that organization. And I left 2 years ago, and I'm going to even speak more about Club Med and YPO. So you see, that's super important.
Right. No, you're totally right. There's so many things that you just mentioned. I saw Aaron making 10 notes as well. But there was one thing I wanted to highlight, and that was the importance of when you go to a new country, being intentional in the way you live in that country. Meaning that, for example, I see a lot of executives that go abroad and they're supposed to lead that international business in that country.
Yeah.
But they lean into their almost like their own country community in that country, if that makes sense, right? For example, Japanese executives, they tend to be very comfortable being with Japanese executives in that country. I often joke about that there's three Japan towns in Silicon Valley. San Francisco, San Jose, and then a plug and play. Plug and play is an accelerator, and they tend to cluster a little bit there. But I have this rule that I set upon myself when I came to Silicon Valley, saying that I'm going to maximum spend 10% of my time with my Danish community in the US and 90% of the time with the community in Silicon Valley. And that, in my opinion, has benefited me a lot in being able to build a lot of these networks in the Bay Area. So it's important to set up guardrails around yourself. And then also, when you didn't look for these leaders, you want to hire them abroad, you know, what you just mentioned, you know, understand what is their networks locally. Is it the expat community or is it the local community? Mm-hmm. Have they actually integrated within the society as well? That will give you an indicator of whether or not you should hire them, in my opinion.
Yeah, thank you, Klaus. It's being intentional is a word we use a lot in YPO. Right. Be intentional. Be intentional and put it at a list. But when I arrive now, I'm in Dallas, Texas. They say, oh, you're going to be in the French International School. I say, no, we're going to be in the local public school. Right. That was obvious. And my wife is also British. So, you know, even, you know, at home is not like one nationally. So we eager to get our kids to speak the different languages. It's good that they have their roots. And as long as they support France in the World Cup, I'm fine. Don't tell my wife. But you know, it's only in soccer. Otherwise, they say, "Oh, we're for America." I say, "Oh, because they win." I say, "Okay." But it's so you need roots. That's super important for your kids. But yeah, enjoy the journey, the local journey. Otherwise, what are you doing? Why are you going outside in all these countries if you're not truly trying to get it for what it is, because otherwise you're not going to understand the culture and you're not going to like it. You're going to judge it. So yeah, of course, that's why after when people become expats, sometimes they're expat all their lives. people think it's that, oh, it's easy, it's supported. You know, you're not supported as the way it was when my dad was an expat. No, it's after you want to get this little new spice. You want to understand this different culture. It's like a language. You know, when you're starting to speak, I heard when you speak three, you want to speak four, five, six, and seven, because that's open your mind, that open your way of seeing things is so huge. And it's you feel good about it. You feel much more in tune with the world in some ways. So I think leader in the future are going to be global leaders, but global leaders doesn't mean that you have a one culture. No, global leaders is that you have fusion food. You know, depending on a situation, I'm going to look for different nationalities. To tell you an example, in Club Med, there was a joke we were saying is that if you know it's going to rain tomorrow, where are your Brazilian? That was really it's not a joke. We always have Brazilian in a team, and it's rain, they're happy. It's snow, is they're happy. They're blue, they're happy. There's so much in the moment that they will get the vibe within the organization and within the resort to the roof, no matter what, right? So I push the envelope, not only just Brazilian, but and say, hey, you want to have something very difficult to do and very organized, you look at your German, you know, I don't simplify that way. But you're starting to be so much in tune with each of your employees that then you know that when you have a situation, you're going to connect with the very best person that can help you. And you don't have those reflex if you haven't been intentionally working on it for a long time.
Yeah, to the point of what you just said, we sort of like to talk about how we're at war with the term expat, because it's really not the best way to go about localizing a business. It's more ivory tower separated, and to all of what you said and what you talked about previously, just around the importance of the local context. Wanted to talk a little bit about the YPO team for a minute. Mm-hmm. You talked about how, you know, there's around 1,000 in terms of employees, or around something like that number, but also tying a little bit to some of the concepts we've been talking about. One thing that we're really big on is what we call universalizing core values. Mm-hmm. There's certain core values that would only resonate with like an American audience, would only resonate with one group. How do you navigate creating that culture, creating that set of core values with such a diverse group on both ends, both probably within that employee group that we'd love to hear about, but also when you have members from 142 countries?
Wow, that's a hard question. I would say what's the story? What do you try to accomplish? Because in our case, we have like 450 direct employees, and then we have another 450 people, you know, contractor helping some of our local chapters. So we want to have the same vision, but they're not employees of the organization. So what I try to communicate is first what's coming from the DNA of the organization. So that's why, you know, I mentioned the story about the creation of YPO. When I will have been in Club Med, I will always talk about the story about Club Med was created, because it's an amazing story. So people around the story starting to understand what are the value behind, what do we try to accomplish? Because they think about Ray Hickok and 27 sitting belt and the 300 employees and Club Med, the two founders trying to get, you know, helping families after the Holocaust in 1950, same time. So when they understand from the story some of the value which are important for the organization, that's where it stick. Where it's challenging is that when you have, oh, this is a vision, this is a purpose, this is of that, this is it. People don't really remember because they say, okay, this is a vision, this is the purpose, this is our values. If you understand why you do it, and you know, you heard all this podcast about that, it's getting easier. We try to be leader. You know, we try leader to be better people, better for the world. You know, how you want to do it? We need to help them. It's all about trust. Yeah, how do you get trust? Vulnerability. How can you be vulnerable? Be your authentic self. Okay, I've got one thing, guys. Be your authentic self. If your authentic self, then you're going to connect with the members, and then you're going to have a customer service. You really want to help them because you connected with them. That's so try to find what is the, in all of the things we try to tell our team, what are the trigger for them to make that natural connection? So maybe they're going to remember, oh, we want leaders to be better leaders and better person. That's going to help them in the connection. Or they're going to think, what I should try to do is being my authentic self. If I'm my authentic self, naturally everything's going to work well together. I don't know if I answer your question, but that's the way I would process it. But that's why I always tell every new employees, I was in Club Med. I don't know the story for Kraft. And I tell the same thing for, organization of YPO. Most of the people wants to join organization because there's something special about it, right? It's not a transaction. You want to feel that you do it for something which is bigger than yourself. Most of the time, it comes from the story about how it was created. Most of the time, it's a beautiful story. An organization will not have survived, 70 years if there was not something great about it. It was never about the CEO. We must have had, I don't know how many hundreds of CEOs. We have a chairman different every year. So it's not about the chairman. You don't have 96% of our members renewing every year if there's not something bigger than the chairman and the CEO. So what is that story? And then what does that mean for you as an employee to make it work well? And try to be as simple as possible. So for me, that has been I've been reusing it for my years in Club Med. Sure. Is especially when you have a diverse and inclusive organization, if you really operate in different countries, the authentic self is one of the best things I would recommend for anyone.
So one more thing we wanted to talk about. Klaus and I love stories about localization. Mm-hmm. There's just, it's tons of fun. I was actually teaching yesterday, Klaus, and I actually brought up ketchup and eating hamburgers in Brazil. And there was a Brazilian student in the room, and he started laughing because there's a particular way Brazilians like to eat hamburgers versus Americans. But when it comes to you talk about the power of connecting with people and taking down some of those boundaries. But I have to imagine culturally, there's different layers and different ways to go about doing that. So how do you localize either some of the rules or some of the process in order to really get the most value out of the members within that local cultural context?
Mm. So first of all, it's not just a Google translation, right? So depending high context, low context. So let's say most of the country is going to be high context. They need to understand the story. They need to click in that, what's the context? Where are you talking? So it takes time. That's why I use story because people remember better stories. It's not because people are like kids, they need beautiful stories and then they would trust it. It's that you remember better stories. So using the words, losing the, in high context countries, you need a lot of context. So people can make your story their story. And then what I would say locally is that, okay, let's say, for example, Club Med wants to open a property or a place in Jamaica. Okay, we operate in Latin America, in Turks and Caicos, in Mexico. Okay, this is what Club Med is all about. This is the story. Okay. How would you tell that story in Jamaica? Okay. And other local people do this. And then you're going to see, it's not really what we say, But do we really care? Right? Do we really care that at one point we don't have exactly the same board in every office around the world? What do we care? We care that what is going to go in is going to be served by people that believe on what is on the wall. So that's what I would tell people. No, being very precise and give as much context as possible about why those words are important. Because somebody tried to, at one point, have a brainstorming of months and months and to say this mission in one sentences. Don't just give the sentences to people just join. Tell them how hard it was to find only these two sentences. Try to tell them what was a debate, what was very important, and what we say and what we didn't want to say. And then tell people, how would you say it in your ways? And not in two sentences, use 10, 20 sentences, make it your own as much as possible. 80% of the job would be done, even if you don't have the same board. That's why I'm always cautious when I see a lot of brands using a slogan in a different language, most of the time English. I don't really understand it. Because maybe it looks cool, I don't know. But people will not connect with something which is not their own language. So you have to be okay that the translation that's going to come up might be a bit different than what you think in your headquarters should be. If you want to be global, if you just want to be an international brand, it's different. But if you really want to be successful globally in just 20 countries, I'm not even talking 142 countries, let the local people tell you what would be the best way to say it with their own words, with their own language, and let it be. If it doesn't look perfect, if it needs much more words than you would expect, what do you care? What you care is that they're going to believe in it, they're going to live for it, and then you're able to, like in a restaurant, every day there's a briefing. In the restaurant, every day people are seeing the same briefing and over again. We work with Ritz-Carlton. Every week they talk about their five values and people give example of those values. And I found that super interesting. See, people don't remember the value, but if you ask an employee every week to tell them, one of your value, and I've got my think of a value, is all in one team. Okay, guys, all in one team. If somebody wants to say, what happens to me was this and happens to that, and that's why it's one team values. And then we read and we explain what is one team value. I demonstrate a one team approach and a can-do spirit in all things I do. Oh, okay, I understand that. And you do it every week and every week and every week. We don't do it perfectly well yet in YPO, but learning from the best restaurant on the Ritz-Carlton leadership, we tell you, you have these little things in front of you. Every week, take just one value and ask one of your employees, okay, this week is member first. Tell me an example about that. And they will tell you with their own language, with their own experience. And now member first, you say, oh yes, member first. I remember what Joe said about it. That would be my advice. Make those values leaves in their local environment.
Fantastic. I have two comments maybe before Aaron will wrap up today's conversation. First and foremost, Aaron, I'm actually surprised your ketchup hasn't turned green because you still have ketchup on the table and you bought it in Brazil about 3 months ago. So I emptied mine to make sure it doesn't turn green at least in a couple of weeks. My comment to you is, I did listen to one of the podcasts that you've done in the past where you connect that authentic self with also being able to service customers better. Can you talk a little bit about that, how those two things are tied together to the audience that are listening to the podcast?
Oh, I hope it was another smart podcast.
It was a very smart comment. So I wanted to...
you're going to need to help me.
Yeah.
I think it's... I don't know how I frame it, but I always say that when people are the authentic self, then they connect.
Right.
The moment you connect with somebody, you have... It changed everything. People say that sometimes they vote for people if they think they want to have a beer with. I don't know. It's something I heard in the US. Do you want to have a beer with that person? Yes or no?
Right.
So people need to feel that what you tell them comes from their heart with people. So when you go to a bank and people say, "Hi, Mr. Mufraji, blah, 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 how can I help you?" Blah, blah, blah. And they must say amazing words, but okay, you just say what you learned to say, or when you are connecting over the phone, you can feel they're reading the text on the teleprompter. Or I see it's a great weather today in Dallas, because they may have seen clouds and temperature in Dallas. It's AI kind of text, auto-generated, what I find super incredible sometimes when you talk to a contact center. But I learned from my wife the half a second moment when somebody talk to you, how do you connect with the person? How do you take the time to, okay, yes, in some way you feel naked, but just be yourself. And when somebody is telling you something, and I can do it now, I'm looking at my screen, like I tried to intentionally do it, is take the time and say, in some ways with your eyes, I hear you. I'm listening to you. yes, I'm in a hurry. I've got thousand things in my head. But how you accept to be who I am and just taking this half a second time where, yeah, I hear you. How was your day today? And leave the silence. And she teach me that when I was in a property, how, you know, you go to the reception, you talk to the chef, you talk to the things. It's great. You speak Spanish, you get English. They have fun with you and so on. But that's what you see also in Undercover Boss, how you take this half a second when you really need to hear the story, and they're very emotional ones. So sometimes you don't want to hear them. You just want to hear the fact. You don't want to have the emotion because you know that's going to trigger something in you. Right. But when you do, it's beautiful. Right. Because you connect with a person and then you have a relationship and you get things done efficiently, and you're not going to go fast, you're going to go far.
Awesome. So Xavier, thank you so much for your great insights. You said so many great things from, you know, the, in some small pieces of advice, like how, you know, when it comes to building a team, skills are overrated, the importance of that growth mindset and being coachable, the power of the authentic self, how it empowers and it connects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a real huge theme is just around communication, mm-hmm. speaking the same language. And the best ways to do that is not just efforts to speak in that person's language, but using the power of story, making your story their story, the power of data too. But, you know, so many great things you shared. So thank you so much. Best of luck as you continue to run and grow an organization across 142 countries with thousands of people. And thank you for your insights today.
Oh, thank you, Klaas and Aaron. Very, very appreciative to be on the podcast for the Global Klaas.
Appreciate it a lot. And hopefully in the future, you'll not say expats within the YPO network, but say entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneur. I love that word. I love that word. Thanks for the insight. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.